हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनाभुनातु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, so the summary of chapters 2, Madhurya Kadambini. Okay. So page 51. Anartha means unwanted desires in the heart, and Nivritti means to cease. There are four kinds of Anartha, right? So the previous Bhajana Kriya is showing the stages that you go through from becoming unstable in Bhajan to stable in Bhajan, right? So what's going to cause that? That's going to be Anartas. So now we're studying Anartas, right? Someone says. Duskritota, Anartas coming from sinful activities. Sukritota, Anartas coming from pious deeds. Aparadhota, Anartas coming from offenses. And Bhaktiyutta, Anartas coming from devotional service. Right? So it's important to understand that since both pious and impious, there's a lot of times we'll accept the sins, okay, those have to be given up. But we'll think that piety is automatically bhakti. But if we're attached to piety, it will block devotional service. It'll block it in a pleasant, nice way. But it still will block it. You know, it's like that gold, solid, you know, gold ball and chain around your foot. It's a really nice ball and chain. You're not going to get much better than that. Right? But it's still, you're still bound. So that's why you see pious, and the attachment to pious and impious, it means the impious has to be given up, but also attachment to piety. You have to be, piety is defined as piety simply because it's the proper activity done without Krishna. So it's not that glorious. Right? It's better than improper activity not being done connected to Krishna. Right? That's sinful activity. Then proper activity not being done to Krishna, that's piety. Then proper activity done connected to Krishna, that's bhakti. Right? Yeah.
Can we say, because now we stop, that we define anisthita and nishthita bhakti on the level of bhajana kriya? Usually we say that when the person is starting to advance, he gets to the level of anartha nivritti. And from that level, then when he gets 75% or whatever off of his anarthas, then he comes to nishtha, and from there it's nishthita bhakti.
Yes, it's prominent, but it still doesn't mean that you don't have these aspects, because it's how steady. Even if it's 75%, it's steady enough to call it steady, but it's a completely steady.
So it doesn't matter on what level we define that? It shouldn't be just on Bhajana Kriya, it can be also on a...
It is, but it's described here in Bhajana Kriya, because that's where you're dealing with the bhajan. But it's not that ruchi is not bhajan. You know what I'm saying? Or Asaki's not bhajan.
Yes.
It's just further stages that when your steadiness in bhajan has come to the point where now you're getting a taste, it's called ruchi. Because you have to remember that it's all just development of faith. So one part faith is called shraddha, right? When it has two parts, then we call it sadhusanga. When it has three parts, it's called bhajana kriya. When it has four, we call it anartha nivritti. When it has five, it's called nishtha. Like that. You understand? So what's happening is the faith is deepening. That's why you see if someone in an advanced stage then gets distracted in their faith, The practices and everything are very nice. Their knowledge of the philosophy is nice. But the problem, they get distracted by somehow or another by anartha. So if it's just that, then we'll say that they're properly situated. Right? But if we see the faith becomes weakened, now they're not so well situated. You know what I'm saying? Because the one is they have full faith in Krishna consciousness, but they get distracted and think, oh, we're not doing enough piety, we're not being nice enough, we're not being good enough, we're not like that, you know, and so devotees need to start doing this, and then they start to get together and make groups and have discussions and try to, you know, do that. Now they've been actually deviated. The faith is low. Because even though they may be performing devotional activities to some degree, but their faith and what it's for and all that's not, because they're thinking that piety is what's going to take you forward, not bhakti. You know, and they're even thinking that without piety, bhakti won't work. You know, in some sense. So just how the acharya does, because all of these are interconnected, so you have to put them someplace and explain them. But they all are overlapping, because sadhu sangha is going all the way through also. You know, just like faith keeps going. So when you get to, you know, so the first stage, Shraddha, that's like we said, one part of that. When you get to two parts, Shraddha, it's called, sadhu sangha. When you get to three parts Shraddha, it's called Bhajana Kriya, but it's also, that's two parts of sadhu sangha. You understand? So it just keeps adding on.
I thought we could stop associating with devotees when we started our
hunting. Yeah, yeah. See, that's the whole point, is that then you go out on your own, you don't have to associate anymore and everything like that.
That's what I had wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And then when you get to Nishta, you don't have to worry about Anartha Nivriti anymore.
Right.
As Prabhu was pointing out from the negative side, from using it in a poetic way, that everything's continuing. It's just that when it gets to a certain volume, it takes on a uniqueness that you call it by that quality. Does that make sense? Yeah. The anarthas tend to smother the natural growth of the creeper of bhakti. At first glance, unwanted desires look like offshoots from the bhakti lata, the creeper of devotion. But in reality, they are mundane desires for position, adoration, and opulence. Right? Because they look similar. That's why a lot of times it's making, no, but unless we're pious, you can't be a good devotee. That's because it looks similar. Like that. You know, and practically any plant, when it first starts to grow, looks the same. You know? Like that. So that's why you have to be on your guard and know. Like I've seen the guys out in the fields, when they first plant the rice, you know, they put the water in the full water in the field, and they plant all the rice. Then they come back through after some, you know, days or weeks, and then they go through and they take out everything that's not rice. But if you look at it, they're very similar, so you really have to be trained to know, okay, that's the rice and that's not. Because they all look very much the same. Because I asked once, how do you know? And he says, you can tell. If you look carefully, you can see. Okay. They color and taint the practitioner's consciousness. Thriving in this way, these anarthas arrest the growth of the creeper of devotional service. Because they taint the consciousness, you don't notice that they're not the creeper. Yes? No, they're all anarthas. Offenses are one category of anarthas. So you commit offenses, that's one kind of anartha. You're committing sinful activities, that's another anartha. Or attachment to pious deeds, that's also another anartha. Or anarthas come from devotional service, improper performance of devotional service. Yes.
Would that one, that last one, be what we were talking about yesterday, the tarangarangani?
I would think it would have these aspects.
Like you're doing this service, but you're doing it kind of for the adoration?
Yes, yes. I mean, ultimately, like you said here, is that they're all going to be for distinction, adoration, and profit.
Right.
That's ultimately what they are for. So they're all manifestations of that, because you can have distinction, adoration, and profit in a sinful way, in a pious way, or, you know, from doing your bhakti.
Right.
Like that. You know? You probably no one's going to take distinction, adoration, and profit from being offensive. Right? Unless they've already categorized somebody that if he has any bad qualities, he can't be a devotee or can't be a leader or can't be senior. And then in that way, they're offending them. Then they'll be very proud of their, you know, show of strength. You know, like that. Yes.
Even some of them are watching Vichya, they continue to attend Yajna together. And one senior devotee forgives them to attend this Yajna. And they feel stressed.
They feel?
Stressed. Because of astrology, they wanted to improve their karma by following Bhakti.
Okay. Should we forbid? See, the point is that's what we're saying here. That's an anartha coming from attachment to pious deeds. So the difficulty comes up is that yes, you want piety, and why do they want piety? Okay, so, but at the same time, is do they understand that material enjoyment doesn't really give the ultimate satisfaction? Do they have that understanding or appreciation? But is anybody telling them that, pointing it out? So that would be the first thing. So then, if they understand it is, that means that if pious activity gives good results, there must be higher pious activities than simply the karma. So that means higher than worshiping the deva, there must be understanding that we're not the soul, we're spiritual, you know, like this aspect. But then that also identifies the soul, but doesn't fully satisfy the soul, because it doesn't deal with the features of Satchit and Ananda, the personal element. So that means there must be the aspect of the actual liberation, that actual piety is going to be a relationship to the Supreme Lord. So therefore, if you're having a relationship with the demigods and thinking that they're the ones giving, the potency that they have comes from the Lord. So therefore, you should be worshipping the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, they can. They can. And Krishna mentions it in the Bhagavad Gita. At the end of his life, they'll go to the heavenly planets. They won't go back to Godhead. They can do it. It's better than the average Joe on the street. That's for sure. At least they're accepting the Lord and everything like that. But you have to know is that won't take them back to Godhead, because they're worshiping and having faith in the demigods. One, Krishna says he'll give the faith, because otherwise who's going to have faith in the demigods? So he gives that faith. And so therefore, having that faith, but that's misdirected, because it should be directed at him. He's the one that gives the power to the demigods. So if they're interested in the demigods, where does the demigods' power come from? Right? Because they're not eternal. So that means it's coming from Krishna. So then they should switch their attention to Krishna. Right? That would be the natural thing, but then you have to preach that way. The second thing is, why would somebody who knows nothing about worshipping demigods and all that, and they have a clean slate, and you could introduce them to worship of the Lord, why would you introduce them to the demigods? Right? We're not the International Society for Hindu Consciousness. We already have that. It means there's already nice societies doing that. You know? Yeah, the BHP is already doing that and dealing with millions and millions of people. So they're doing a great job. So we don't need to, you know, do something that's reinvent the wheel here. So why would we preach that way? You know? And because the point is the Bhagavatam also says, even you want material desire, better to worship Krishna. That's an intelligent person. It may be less intelligent of the intelligent people, but to worship the demigods, they're always considered unintelligent. So why would we consider that? Now, if they don't know about demigods and they don't know about all these things, they don't know about Krishna and all that either. So it's a whole new thing for them. So why would we hide from pure devotional service? You know what I'm saying? Unless it's about just getting numbers. Yeah, but why would they have to perform yajnas to demigods? Yeah, so it's a job. So then why don't they mention the difference between that and devotional service? So they're going to get money from them and be guru? They're going to run a business off of them and be the spiritual guru? You know, pick one or the other. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. Be one or the other. You shouldn't do both. Means, and why do you have to worship the demigods for that? Do they know anything about the demigods? Okay. Their background will be some form of Christianity or Islam, right? Are there any demigods involved in that? No. And if somebody has faith in demigods according to either of those religions, what happens to them?
Stoned to death.
Yeah. They'll be stoned to death, burnt to death. You know, in any case, they're going to hell and whatever it is. And they're not even going to get a bucket, right? Because if you have a bucket, you know, it seems to improve the quality of the ride, right? So they're not going to get a bucket either, right? So that's the whole thing, is that then why these, they have no concept of that. They have a concept that the Supreme Lord is there. But they're materialistic working. So why not take that instead of take them from there to a higher person that they're actually worshiping, connected to the Lord, then take them down a step to a lower and then say it's preaching. It's business. Bad business. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is you can worship all the different... Anybody who knows astrology, you have the planets. The planets are run by Vishnu deities. So if you have a problem with Mars, you worship Nisshinga. They don't have a problem with worshiping Nisshinga. Nisshinga looks cool. Everybody likes Nisshinga. You know, Vamana, he's cute, you know, like that. Buddha, you know, everyone likes him also. You know, so it's not a problem. So they can worship the different... You do things connected with there. You know what I'm saying? So this is what we would do. It's still materialistic, but at least it's in connection with the Lord. The other one's just materialistic, and that's it. And then if they take initiation, they're still attached to that, of what benefit have we done for them? You say, oh, I got him initiated. Jai, Hari Bol. You know? And why did you do that? When you could have just preached the other straight things? You just have to explain it. You have to use logic. But you have to have the intelligence to do that. And that's what Buddha Yoga is about, developing intelligence in connection with Krishna. So they have intelligence how to use the Vedic culture to make money, but they're a dime a dozen here in India. You've never been walking in the street in Calcutta or any major city. There's a guy sitting, there's one here, sitting down on the path. He's got a parrot cage and then all these little books laid out and all that. The guy's an astrologer. And that's all he does is make money. You know, they're everywhere. So it's not a big deal. It's like, whoopee, oh wow, I've gone from being, you know, whatever it is into being a, you know, mundane Hindu astrologer and probably not even very good at that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that mechanics, it's still mundane because it's all about mechanics. So we have to switch to, it's about Krishna. And then if the material, of course these things come, but what piety is connected with bhakti. So if you have bhakti, you get everything else. Otherwise, they'll get stuck on that point. And you can get stuck there a long time. They have attachment to worshiping the demigods, which they didn't have before. And now you've given them that can last lifetimes. So how have you really benefited them? Yeah, okay, by association, that part, you get some, that's good. But you could have done it in another way. So then, how does that show one's own faith? Does that make sense? Because it's not that they're going and starting there with people who are already worshiping demigods and trying to take them forward. They're going with people who have no idea of demigods. Like that. You know, the idea of, oh, you're hiding Krishna consciousness, as if everybody's against Krishna consciousness. So they color and taint the practitioner's consciousness, like it said there. Thriving in this way, these anartas arrest the growth of the creeper of devotional service. So the four anartas mentioned before, these four, right, can be mitigated in five following ways, right, to different levels. So you see is that there's a progress, and there's also a depth to which they are. So eka, dveshartini, partially. Two, bahu, deshavartini, substantially. Three, prayiki, almost completely. Purna, completely. And atyantiki, absolutely, thoroughly. So even though it's completely, it's still, you want to get to absolutely thoroughly. The many anarthas stemming from aparats are partially destroyed in the final stages of bhajana kriya. Right, so depending upon these four, they're destroyed to different degrees at different points in the process. Does that make sense? Yeah. The many anarthas stemming from aparads are partially destroyed in the final stages of bhajana kriya, rendering devotional service under the guidance of a spiritual master. This is known as eka desha vartini, like partially. So the aparads, so that's why aparads, one has to be so careful, because you'll see this continues right all the way through up to just before prema. Only at that point do they go away. That's why anarthas are considered the worst. Right? We make it that sin is the worst and piety is fabulous, but yeah.
I think it doesn't go out to get prema, only when you go back to God.
Oh, it means, yeah. It means, okay. But you can't get prema unless you have this, unless you're in your spiritual form exclusively, because in that beginning stage you can't function there. Because the prema, because see, it's up to that point. When you deal with one sense at a time. Right? But at prema, all five senses can be absorbed in Krishna. And that much ecstasy can't be tolerated by the material body. So, therefore, Vastu Siddhi means you give up the material body. So that would be the thing. Is that you're giving that, then you come to platinum prema. But it means just before. It means up to that point. So the effects are there. So one always has to be careful about aparas. Though we tend not to be, but when bhajana kriya attains maturity, it turns into nishta, or steadiness in devotional activities. In this stage of development, the mitigation of anarthas is substantial. Bahu vesha vartini. Thereafter, on the platform of rati, attraction, right? Because once you get to actually being nishta, it's just a short time before you get taste and attachment. Right? Then you got the next major. Right? So it's partially done when you come to the point and you become steady. Right? So thereafter, on the platform of rati, attraction, the unwanted desires in the heart are almost completely absolved. Prayiki. With the first awakening of prema or divine love, these anarthas are completely removed. Purna. Finally, the Narta is totally uprooted, adyantiki, when the devotee receives the mercy and shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. So, then awakening of prema. It hasn't come to the point of prema yet, but it means that you've gotten, so you started with rati. So then they're going to be bringing that out, basically you would call it that at this stage, if you're talking like this, up until you get that, how do you call it? That complete attraction for Krishna. Right? So, up through Smarana Dasa. When you come to, then this next stage, that would be the Apandasa, when you actually can take part in the pastimes and interact there. Then it will be completely removed. But it's only fully gone at the point when then one receives the whole shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. So when one comes to pay them. Yes. Anarthas are anarthas, whether you're aware of them now or not. Because they're there from before. At some point you were aware. You're saying about aware, last life you were aware, and maybe this life you're unaware of what you were aware of last life, but the effect is still there in the consciousness. Does that make sense? That's how we are so naturally tend towards not being Krishna conscious. Right? We don't even have to practice it. We're like spontaneously, you know, not Krishna conscious. Right? Does that make sense? So it has its effect. Does that make sense or not?
Yeah, I also wanted to ask, but if you know about something is wrong, offense, and you commit it,
it's not good. Point is this. Means we're worried about these details, but why not just avoid the whole thing in the first place? You know, it's like sitting there and discussing, well, if I drop a brick on my toe, if I drop it, you know, sideways, you know, or I drop it the endwise, or I turn it onto the point and drop it, or do I give it a spin and drop it? Why not just don't drop the brick on your foot? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You're just trying to get rid of that anartha. Right. That's your practice. It is an anartha, don't you? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Now let us discuss. So this is from Aparads, right? So you see, is they only completely are totally uprooted when one comes to Vastu City. Right? So they're going to have an effect all the way through. That's why it's not just so smooth going through the prema just immediately. We hear the holy name, and then we're just crying and rolling on the ground in ecstasy because of these anarthas. So this one's the toughest one. Like that. Now let us discuss the anarthas arising from impious activities or duskritota, right? So the first one is that you got to the first level when you took up anartha, you basically took up bhajana kriya and you got through anartha nivriti, right? To that point, it brings you to the one. You come to nishta, that brings you to the next. So you're taking up bhajana kriya, you're starting that process, you're working on it, right? So now, from impious activities, these anarthas are almost eradicated prayiki in the bhajana kriya stage of devotional service, right? You see, so they go away so much easier. They're almost completely gotten rid of, right? We like to make a huge, like, stink about it, but they're the easiest to get rid of.
So those fall into 75%, but you say that, you know, we finish that and become nishta?
Yeah. But it means when you're coming to these stages, that's how much, it would be probably the combination of them. But it just means basically anishta, sinful activities, basically you don't see. Right? There may be desire and like this. Does that make sense? Completely absolved purna in the development stage of nishta, steady faith in devotional service, and destroyed absolutely without a trace, ayantiki, in the stage of ashakti, or unwavering attachment to devotional service. So they just go through. When you have, it'll be explained, I think, a little later. When you get to ruchi, then you just, there's no interest in material things because you have a taste for Krishna consciousness. So you just don't have the taste in the other. Right? Means we have a taste all along. That's why we're interested and we're taking part in the process. But when the taste becomes the prominence, there's just no interest in the mundane.
Okay.
Yes.
The previous point that aparadhas, they are blocking our bhakti as such, but we still progress.
Yes, because bhakti is more powerful.
But anarthas, they don't block.
No, that means offenses are one kind of anartha. Means you have four kinds of anarthas.
Okay.
So one comes from sinful activities, one from pious, one from offenses, one from devotional service. So anarthas all block, and if you're not careful, so if you're careful of them, that's how you're trying to remove them and you move forward. If you're not careful of them and just, you know, let it go, then they can stop the whole progress. So it's just a matter of association and practice and like this. That's why you see someone may not be doing well, they come in association with devotees and they start doing things nicely again and moving forward nicely again. Just they were unaware. They were so absorbed in their lifestyle and what they're doing that they didn't notice, you know, the anarthas. And so it stops. And then they come in association, you have something to compare it to, and then they start getting more serious again. You know, and then they start moving forward. So already a sakti, just the anarthas, you know, from sinful act, they're just gone. Like that. Anarthas stemming from bhakti are absorbed in the following matter. Eka dveshart tini, partially in the bhajana kriya stage. Purna, completely in the nishta stage. And adyantika, absolutely thoroughly in the ruchi stage. Right? So then you don't want to do anything that's not bhakti. Does that make sense? So the point is if you have a taste, you follow the taste. Right? Let's say you're eating something. And the eating you have, let's say it's kind of like, you have various items within what you can eat. And they can be combined. Right? So which ones are you going to combine together? Is it going to be a mathematical consideration? Is it going to be which one's closer? You're going to eat that first and just eat till you get to the other side of the plate. What is going to be the consideration?
The complementary, the taste.
Right? So that's the whole point. Does it depend upon rules?
No.
That's the meaning of spontaneous. But can you show the science of what tastes go with what and different things like that, and depending upon your constitution and the time of the day and the season, you can give a whole thing. But that's not why you're doing it. You're getting it because of the taste. And the taste can be explained. Somebody says. So therefore, Ruchi, you have the taste, so you only do things that are in line with the taste. You don't do things that aren't in, that don't follow that taste. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, you won't do anything in devotional service that's not proper devotional service. Does that make sense? Because you follow the taste. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yes. So in the beginning, it's about our taste. As it goes more advanced, it's more about Krishna's taste. Because the only reason we're getting a taste is because Krishna's happy with it. But at some point you see the Braja Bhaktis, it's because Krishna's happy, they're looking for Krishna's happiness. Yes?
For example, devotee has to sing in kirtan, but he doesn't have to chant japa, but he should chant japa in this time. Will be this type of enough?
No, it means he'll have a taste, so he'll just follow. He'll just follow where the taste is. So, therefore, the holy name is tasty. So, therefore, wherever the opportunity, if it's time for japa, he'll chant. If it's kirtan, he'll do kirtan.
Give some examples. How can the practice
that one doesn't do what you should do? You don't do the bhakti, you don't do the activity, or you're not paying attention while you're doing the activity. If you have a taste, if what you're eating has a taste, are you not aware? You're aware or not? Yeah, so then you don't do things you shouldn't do. But otherwise you could be inattentive, you could be other things. And does that make sense? So, means he's giving these areas, you know, that, and then he'll fill them in with all the different other things that you consider, and then you have to put them all together and apply them at once. Does that make sense? Like I'm explaining, oh, this does this, this does this. So many things, they have what they do, and then now you have to combine them. But to explain them, I have to explain them one by one. But in an application, they're used together. Does that make sense? Yes.
In the same words, that the benefits we're getting from following the bhakti mark, those are the anarthas, if we think it's ours. Or
yeah, that can be, because then the taranga rangini, like that, or, you know, the earlier stages that, you know, it's, you know, renunciation is, you know, how you say, glorified and all that, but at the same time, you know, the household is considered the most important of all the ashrams because they maintain all the others and all that. But then if you're detached, then, you know, you can focus on Krishna, but at the same time, as if you have desire, you should engage it in Krishna, like this, that kind of thing. That's, yeah, you keep yourself busy. But it's connected to Krishna. That's why you'll move forward. As long as you keep it connected to Krishna, you move forward. When you don't connect it to Krishna, that's when the problem comes up. That makes sense.
Yeah,
even if it comes not from bhakti, you're still good. If you're attached, it's still a problem. Right. So, in other words, to be attached to anything other than, always remember that it's about the point of remembering Krishna, not forgetting Krishna, and that remembering Krishna favorably, you know, to please him, free from karma and jnana. So these are showing where you can get distracted from that. So, okay. This is the conclusion of the holy sages after their considerable deliberation on this topic. A famous axiom states that as the sun, upon arising, dissipates the darkness of night, similarly the holy name of God, when once heard or chanted, destroys all the sins a person can commit. There is much evidence in the scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16-44, supporting this aphorism, such as that even a chandala, dog-eater, becomes liberated simply by once hearing or chanting the Supreme Lord's holy name. Right, so the sun has come up. I mean, the sun is there, and it's just the light is there. You have the full light before the sun's come up. You know, I mean, it's not full, but it's pretty much 90%. And so at that point, then, it removes all these, how you say, it brings one to the transcendental, the liberated platform. Like that, so it dissipates all these things. So we're taking it that the mundane is the big thing, the pious, the impious, like that. Or the rules and regulations and the deity worship is all important. But the strongest is the aparaj. We learn from the story of Ajamil in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the holy name chanted even once in the Namabhasa stage, the shadow of the holy name, can eradicate all anartas, even that of avidya, nescience, and is capable of elevating one to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. That's the whole point, because these things are negative things. It gets rid of them. So the point is Namabhas can remove all negative things. Right? Pure chanting, that'll give you prema. Right? So that's the thing, is getting rid of the anartas, that's not the big deal. Developing prema is. But it's not that we don't put attention to seeing that we're not being distracted. Otherwise, then these anartas can, as it said, grow and then choke the creeper. That's why we're worried about it, because they can grow and make trouble. But we're not worried that these are the big things. Right? Developing prema, that's the big thing. Okay. It could be said that the method for removing the anartas listed in the previous paragraphs is perhaps imbalanced. There's no doubt about the unlimited potency and capacity of the holy name, but the holy name, being displeased with offenders, withdraws his potencies and does not manifest himself to them. Right? So, means with these other three, you move forward. But with anartas, then he may withdraw the powers. Right? Thus we can understand that this is the reason why all sorts of anartas, offenses, and sins are present in a person. Despite the presence of such obstacles, the Yamadutas, the servants of the god of death, are ineffectual against those who chant the holy name, even with offenses. The scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam 6:119, confirm that those fortunate persons who are chanting the holy name need never set eyes on Yamaraj, the god of death, or his fearsome messengers, even during a dream. That if you've taken up the chanting, you won't. Yamaraj isn't part of the scene anymore for them. Right? Their arrangements of where they go, their births, and this and that, that's not arranged by Yamaraj. One may continually chant the holy name for a long time, but if the signs of love of God do not manifest, then we can understand that this is because of namaparad, or offenses against the holy name. What is the destructive nature of these offenses against the holy name? Hearing and chanting the Lord's holy name, qualities and so on, bestows prema. Visiting places of pilgrimage connected with the Lord's pastimes rewards one with perfection. And regularly honoring the Lord's prasad subdues the senses. Yet, namaparad is so devastating that, although transcendental and completely spiritual, these activities appear mundane. How serious are these offenses that can cause such a phenomenon? Right? You're taking these activities that are purely spiritual and you can perceive them as mundane. So he's saying, that's how serious it is. There's something that is transcendental, you can't see it. What are those offenses? This question expresses deep astonishment. One may say that the offender against the holy name is condemned to develop aversion to God, making it impossible for him to remain firmly fixed in devotional service under the guidance of his guru. Right? So we're talking about someone in Krishna consciousness. Right? Yeah. This is certainly true. It is also true that just as a very sick patient loses his appetite, a grievous offender to the holy name loses his attachment for hearing, chanting, and other devotional activities. However, just as the patient's sickness abates after some time, his appetite gradually returning, so also when the offender's sensual cravings decrease after a long period of sense enjoyment, his interest in devotional service is rekindled. Right? So even though it may retract, it's still with time, it'll come back again. Right? So we're just saying that's the power of devotional service of the holy name. Point is why waste your time? Because you can't say how long it's retracting for. You know, we could be talking sometime now, or we could be talking lifetimes. So, the conclusion is that the offender again becomes eligible to render devotional service. To continue the analogy, a nourishing and healthy diet of milk cannot fully revitalize a seriously diseased man. It helps him slightly, but does not kill the germs and bacteria. By proper medicines and diet, however, the patient is gradually able to regain good health. In this way, after again becoming eligible to perform devotional service, the devotee eventually maintains manifest devotional symptoms such as sincere hearing, chanting, and serving. In other words, the different stages of devotion listed in the scriptures such as Shraddha, Sarasanga, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivriti, Nishta, step by step, they all form a foolproof method of advancement. Right? So it is the process. Does that make sense? So that's why you have these things there, because just chanting the holy name then could take you, but the problem is depending on the disease, as he says, then all these other problems are there, and you get distracted by them. So by following these other aspects that are given in the regulations of devotional service, then that limits that we can't do anything too crazy. Right? And so we're engaged in positive activities and supportive activities of the chanting of the Holy Name. And then that takes us forward.
Means this piety one, I think, is not there. How the piety is removed?
How the piety is removed?
Anatta is coming from, piety is mentioned. Anatta is coming from, offenses is mentioned. The offenses, anatta is coming from piety.
It'll probably be similar to impiety. Right? Because once you get a taste for the holy name, then you give up all your other pious attachments. You know, it's like that example of Yamunacharya. You know, goodbye to my 3 times bath, goodbye to this, that, because he's just absorbed in chanting. Right? Because otherwise he would regularly do all those things very, very nicely, like clockwork. Now he might do them, he might not. Depending on if he's absorbed in Krishna, he might forget. Does that make sense? Yeah. When some people do not see ecstatic symptoms manifest in those devotees fully engaged in hearing and chanting, when they see that these devotees are also inclined towards sinful activities, they often imagine aparads. Not only that, but when they see devotees suffering everyday distresses, such persons assume that devotees are not free from corrupted sins. The philosophical conclusion to this is deftly explained by the analogy of a fruit-bearing tree. It bears fruit after a certain period of time, not just at any time, nor immediately upon being planted. Similarly, a devotee blessed by the holy name because of his devotion is showered with the mercy of the name, all in the proper time. As for the sinful reactions the devotee suffers because of his previous impiety, they are compared to the striking of a fangless snake, inconsequential. Therefore, his sorrows, reversals, retributions, and diseases are not a consequence of Prarabdha sins. The Lord has declared, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8, the person who is blessed by me, I gradually take away his wealth. His friends and relatives, he'll take away his wealth. His friends and relatives drift away from him because of his poverty and suffering. Right? So, by bringing out one suffering, you get rid of all the other sufferings. It's thorn with a thorn. That's the idea. In another place, the Lord says, the awesome affliction known as poverty is in fact a sign of mercy. See? So it's a baby thing. Awesome, right? you go into the house and you can see they just don't have money. Then they awesome. Wow, okay. No? Yeah. Right? Yeah. The truth is that the Supreme Lord, the greatest benefactor of his devotees, purposefully inflicts suffering on his devotees just to increase their humility and yearning for him. Thus, the devotees' woes are not because of fruitive activities, nor are they reactions of corrupted sins. So we understand the Lord is taking care of the devotee. And according to the particular individual, what they have, what their attachments are, what their distractions are, then the Lord's going to take care in that way. Does that make sense? And so we can understand it's whatever's there. It's not that the devotee's impious or this or that. It's just one is that the holy name will manifest in due time. Right? And the other is that it's a matter of any reactions. You see, this is just Krishna's making the arrangements to make the person, have the proper attitude, to make them humble, to attract them to him. So devotees are in a different category. That's why Prabhupada calls it Krishna karma. Hmm? What to do? What are your options? Keep the attachments until it's means you can do that. Keep the attachments until it's obvious that it doesn't work anymore. And then at that time try to catch up. Or understand that Krishna knows the best. So we're saying, oh no, but if I maintain this attachment, then I'll be happier. But the point is if happiness was attainable, don't you think people would already be doing it? Does that make sense? Wouldn't all the people of the world be happy? Right? It means it's just like you see, is that previous generation developed something and people just build on that. Right? So now if it's been worked out, what makes people happy, people would be doing it and it would already be something everybody would know and everybody would just be happy. But nobody's happy. And they're all maintaining their attachment. Yeah. But then you see devotees that they're giving up their attachments, they're becoming happy.
For example, we see, the story of Shivastakur, he lost his son, and he was not disturbed by them. And we see that if we will request Krishna to with himself, he maybe will also do it with us. And he's not ready to touch that with him.
Now, why Shivastakur?
Because if something is our attachment, when we see some example, we need to that.
So then the thing is you have to connect your attachment to Krishna. No? That's all. Right? What are the rules regarding your attachment for using the Lord's service? What's the point? So that's what you follow. So you're engaged in Krishna's service. But to avoid serving Krishna, in that capacity and other capacities, then what will be the benefit? Somebody say? So that's then anartha nivritti. Okay? Because it's dealing with anartha nivritti, but it's dealing all the way through. What we can see is that it has its main place where it is that brings one to nishta. Right? Then four, nishta. We discussed the two types of bhajana kriya, steady nishta and unsteady anishta. Job. Unsteady Bhajanakriya was further divided into six sections, but little was discussed about Bhajanakriya Bhakti performed on the steady or Nishta platform. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2, 17-18 explains the reason for following this particular sequence in the following verses. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Supersoul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. By regular attendance in classes on Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. The Supreme Lord is the greatest benefactor of the pure devotees, the saintly sadhus. Therefore, the only way to receive the Lord's mercy is to first receive the grace of the pure devotees. The first verse quoted previously describes the unsteady Bhajanakriya stage of devotional service. The second verse, 1-18, describes Nishta Bhakti, or Naishtiki Bhakti, or steady devotional service, also known as the Nishta stage. Not tiptoeing. In describing the two stages of bhakti, both the verses mention destroying inauspicious things in the heart, of purifying the heart of unwanted material desires. The second verse quoted suits that imperfections are almost completely destroyed, meaning that some residue of impurity is still there in the heart. A devotion that possesses nishta, firm commitment and undeviating faith, is known as nishtita bhakti. At the stage when an artist still persists in the heart, the devotee may try as hard as possible to counteract them by devotional activities. Yet the five internal obstacles, laya, vikshepa, apraptipati, kashaya, and rasasva, undermine his attempts to reach steadiness and devotion. Once the anartas are removed, then these five obstacles are almost abolished and devotion becomes firm and undeviating. Right? So these stages coming along because of anartas. So you remove the anartas, then you move through these stages. Therefore, it can be said that the absence of these five impediments in the hearts are symptoms of nishtita bhakti. The five obstacles are defined in the following way. One, laya is the weakness of being more soporific during hearing about the Lord than while chanting his names, and more soporific while remembering Lord Hari than during hearing about him. What's soporific?
Sleepy.
Soporific.
Sleepy.
Okay. Being sleepy while hearing than while chanting, and being sleeping while chanting or remembering than hearing. Okay. Vikshepa is talking or thinking about mundane nonsense during devotional activities such as hearing or chanting. Popular. Well, both of them are popular, right? Because you have to be awake to be into the second one. So after you've conquered the first one, then you can...
you conquer the first one by second one.
Oh, you keep yourself awake. Why are you sitting and talking nonsense? I'm conquering Laya. Come on.
Conquering the passion by staying in ignorance.
Yes. Apratipati is when both Laya and Vikshepa are absent, but at time one still feels incapable of or disinterested in hearing, chanting, and so on. You don't have an interest, you're not talking nonsense, but at the same time you're not falling asleep, but you're still not interested in doing something devotional. Kasaya is defined as the tendency to display such faults as anger, greed, and arrogance during devotional activities. So you're doing devotional activities, right? Because the first one, you're not really doing devotional activities. You're asleep or talking nonsense or not doing anything, right? So one is there is negative. Then you come into neutral, like akarma. You're not doing anything. So you're not. So therefore, you're not doing something proper. Then here, you're doing something proper. But how you say? But you're still there's anger, greed, arrogance. All these things are mixed in with the devotional service. Then rasasvada means that the mind is so attached to sense pleasure, often meditating on it, then he's unable to hear and chant with concentration. Right? So then you come up with that. So these all are, how you say? So when these are absent, then you know that you're, you know, to that degree you're absent. Then you know that, that to that degree one is fixed. Right? Does that make sense? Because you're going from anishta to nishtita. So that means how much these are going away by avoiding the apara, means by avoiding the anarthas and all that. Then you'll go through these stages, and you see the stages that will bring you up through that. These things are getting less and less. Does that make sense? Yeah. With the removal of these obstacles, the devotee makes progress towards nishta, or steady devotion. When nishtita bhakti blossoms in the devotee's consciousness, the immediate effect is that he is no longer ruled by anger, greed, or any other influences from the modes of passion and ignorance. The naishtiki bhakti, bhakta, has nishtita bhakti, naishtiki bhakta. Yeah, get your eyes and A's there, right? The naishtiki bhakta becomes firmly fixed on the Supreme Lord, who is always situated in pure goodness, and experiences divine bliss. The Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.19 confirms this. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desiring, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness, when he becomes completely happy. Right? So this is how you become happy. Yeah, that's what it says here. Mind is attracted to sense pleasure, often meditating on it, so he's unable to hear and chant. So that's the fifth of them. Basically, it says that this anartha nivritti, these things go away, and that's why then you come to nishta. That's what I was saying before, is that they're predominantly, they're basically gone. Like, you know, I think it was, what was the position? Okay, nope. Okay, not here. Impious. Almost eradicated, priyati in the bhajana kriya states, that you're taking it up, and it's pretty much gone. That you're taking up and interested and surrendering and following the instructions. And completely absolve porn in the development of nishta. And destroy completely without a trace at ashakti. Like that. So that aspect is just going like that. So something is there, it comes up now and again, like it's mentioned, but then it goes. So he just knows that it sometimes we're able to do, sometimes not. Because we always have to remember that prema is perfection. That's the time we're trying to get to, or actually it's beyond perfection. Means the level of prema, some things continue, but these lower ones that you just talked about now, they're going away earlier, so there's always some disturbance, but otherwise it says it's completely gone without a trace at ashakti. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premi.